You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey everybody, welcome to another Bald Move Television, the officially unofficial podcast for all of television across interdimensional time and space. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Today we're going to be talking about two particular shows, Rick and Morty, which recently finished up its season three. Actually, this weekend finished up its season three. And Star Trek Discovery, the latest iteration of the Star Trek universe. We've seen the first three episodes of that. I think we're going to talk about Rick and Morty first.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to skip ahead to the Star Trek stuff, there'll be time codes in the show notes. So the final three episodes of Rick and Morty. Last time we talked, it was the Citadel mix-up, the Ricklantis mix-up, which we both quite enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, we saw Morty's Mind Blowers, which was the replacement for the interdimensional cable series. And we saw the ABCs of Beth, which delves into Beth's backstory. And then the final, I don't know what they call it, it's the finale. He fought with the United States president, among other things. What'd you think of this three? Let's talk about the three episodes and then maybe our thoughts on season three as a whole.
Okay. Of the three episodes, I think I like the finale the most, with Morty's Mind Blowers coming in second and ABC's Beth third.
I didn't care for Morty's Mind Blowers. I thought it was a poor replacement for interdimensional cable.
Interesting. I thought it was a smart replacement.
Okay.
For interdimensional cable.
Why do you think? Because I guess what I mean by that is I didn't find the premise funny. I found that it's weird because it seemed like they made revelations about Rick and Morty's essential character that would have destroyed the show long term, and then they hit the reset button at the end.
Yeah, sure.
Which is funny, but I didn't feel like that the situations depicted in the Morty's Mindbenders were all that funny. Then why tell us something about the horrific nature of their relationship and then hit the reset button at the end?
I mean,
literally no one learned anything but thus the audience.
But that's the thing that I like about it is it's essentially interdimensional cable while having some relevance to the story. Like, aside from that one thing that they do in interdimensional cable that I can't remember that well, that centered around Beth and horses and I don't remember exactly what it was, but they did one thing in interdimensional cable that, like, added to the story, but everything else was just kind of stupid. And
yeah, there's always the A plot that's like, you know, Beth and Jerry exploring other dimensional lives where they got an abortion and didn't have summer and lived perhaps more fulfilling lives, but ultimately maybe not.
Yeah.
And then the second one was Jerry not refusing to give up his penis as a heart transplant for the intergalactic humanitarian. What do you call a humanitarian? Only it's for all aliens.
I don't know.
I think they use the word humanitarian unironically.
Mm-hmm.
I thought both of those episodes, they told something interesting about Beth and Jerry and also entertained the hell out of me with, you know, Jan Michael Sector 17 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Morty's Mind Blowers, again, what was the funny mind blower?
I mean, there were a lot of little funny things. I really liked the one where he flips the switches in the garage, turn down the lights, and the other one to, I guess, turn off the support,
the life support
on this storage shed full of dudes. And then at the end, he flicks another switch. He goes, what was that? I thought that was a pretty good one. I don't know. I like the idea that Morty, if he remembered half of the shit that he has experienced, would be unable to live.
Well, I like how Morty's were like these existential, like, crazy things that he's done that he caused people to commit suicide or he's killed a bunch of people, where Rick has removed things like Morty beat him in checkers one afternoon.
Yeah.
Like the stuff that Rick, like, how fucking petty he is about that.
Yeah. Or the stuff where Rick let him down, which I think tells you, you know, nothing you didn't know about Rick, which is he secretly loves his family and
in a weird
extends
way,
to Morty. Yeah.
In a very irrational
way. He would never admit it.
Right.
Deep down.
I did like the part I liked the best was at the end where they wipe each other's minds. And they're about to kill each other because
Summer comes in,
murder suicide, and Summer's like, "Oh, is this a level 3? Oh, it's a level 4." And
she's
got these instructions to put everything back together. And then you see like the tail end of like the House Hunters version of interdimensional Cable.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of thought that was the way they hit the reset button was kind of cool. But I don't. It's one of those weird things. Like, well. And this is such a landmine that Morty would rather kill himself than go on, and Rick would rather die than be the monster that apparently Morty thinks he is. Then, I mean, isn't that just a landmine we're waiting to step on later? And also, it's not the first time this has happened, so...
Yeah, I think that's... I don't know, to me, that is an evolution of those characters. Like, we understand that about them.
Okay.
Whereas before, they always seemed to go on in an almost uncaring way, but...
Yeah.
Now we found out that they don't actually go on in an uncaring way. They simply erase their minds.
Let's talk about the ABCs of Beth, because I really liked this episode, and I liked, you know, Beth's realization about herself. And it's also something that, coincidentally, I've been talking with the son about the fact that, you know, you can't really bitch and moan about, or you can bitch and moan about the way your life is going and feel sorry for yourself, or you can decide to embrace the choices you've made. And then, because the reality is, you don't have to do anything. Like, I don't have to be married to Cecily and be the father to my son, or be like, I could, like, literally clean out the Bald Move bank account right now and go to South America.
Sure.
And who's stopping me? Like, just sometimes contemplating these what we call unthinkable options gives you agency back in your life. It's like, well, that's not my vision of who I am, so I'm not a slave to it. It's a choice that I'm making. I'm not going to be that shit.
Sure.
Or fuck it, I will be that shit. And do you know, that gives you your life back. And I thought that was great that what I thought was incredible is at the end of the episode, you can't tell which choice Beth made. Because if she cloned herself and she's gone to go, you know, roam the cosmos, then that's exactly what it would look like. Or if Beth has just embraced the choice that she's made and is now at peace and happy with it, then, like, you really can't tell. And the next episode immediately pays off. I thought it was great.
Is it – so I guess are they trying to say that it's not about how it actually is? It's more about how you view it?
Yeah, I think that's kind of life in a nutshell.
Sure, yeah.
You know, because life, you know, we said ad nauseum on these podcasts, like, the universe doesn't give a shit.
No.
And that's, not. I think that's a lot of, because I listen to, like, Alan Sepinwall and his partner talk about this a lot, and I felt like this point is missed. Like, you know, they're like, well, this is more like Rick wanking. You know, when he goes off into soliloquy about the universe not caring, and if you're smart, you do this, you do that. It's like, I thought those things are taken to be literally true. You know, and this goes back to the episode where of Pickle Rick at the therapy, where the therapist makes the point that, you know, you can choose to be healthy, you can choose to be not, it's whatever. But, you know, don't sit there and say you're superior when you're covered in rat shit and pickle juice. I felt like that, like, a lot of people misunderstood that Rick's speech at the end is like that. It's not he was saying there's no difference between the choice Beth made. It's just that there is no universal moral answer, but what you can't do is make everyone around you miserable about the choices you've made that they had no control over, because that's not fair.
Sure.
But you thought that was your least favorite.
Yeah.
What was it about it, I guess?
I don't know, because I liked a lot of stuff in it. I guess it's just that the finale was I really got tickled by some of the stuff in Morty's Mind Blowers, and then the finale I thought was a pretty good finale. I mean, it did change the equation of Rick and Morty a little bit. And so, like, in comparison to those other two, I thought it was the weakest, but that doesn't mean it was bad.
Okay. Because I really liked the Fruitbyland stuff.
Yeah, the Fruitbyland stuff is
Beth trying to high-road Rick about, you know, like, essentially treating Fruitbyland as if he just left her in front of an iPad, and he's like, oh my god, what kind of monster... Oh, the ground is soft. You can't die. Oh, you can breathe the water. What kind of monster did that?
Yeah.
Then juxtaposed with the actual real monster coming and ripping his arm off. And Beth not real, like Beth thinking he's still doing the bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out, like, I thought it was funny that Beth instantly jumped to, oh my God, he must have sustained himself by having sex with creatures and eating his offspring.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually being true, and they keep adding on, like, confirmation, like, it's almost comedy torture. By the time these little, the King Tommy's progeny is reenacting this cycle of cannibalistic incest, it's gone back to being funny. But I guess I was reading online, a lot of people thought it was tedious.
I thought
the kids, those kids were adorable, and the way their voice worked is, and I got a real kick out of it.
So I missed some of the setup for that. It ran by real quick. Did the father of Tommy actually eat him and he was a clone?
No, the father of Tommy, like, this Tommy just went missing.
Okay.
And everyone assumed that he killed and ate him because, you know,
see, I thought there was some, like,
making a murderer kind of thing.
So I thought that he had actually eaten him, and that the whole conceit of the episode is that the acorn falls straight down, baby. Like,
no,
that's what I thought it was. Both Beth and Tommy had taken to the routes that their fathers took.
No, Beth tried to kill Tommy because she's unsupervised in Fruityland, and I see that's the thing.
Right,
like,
right. So my thinking was, okay, she tried to kill Tommy because she is like her father. She's mm-hmm. too smart. She's evil in a lot of ways, the same ways he is. And that Tommy was also like his father, eating his children. But
no, I think that was just another layer of irony. But I think that's like, because that's the thing, like. That's another thing where the show asks you what you want to believe, because Rick was afraid of his daughter, but I don't know if he was really afraid of his daughter, because he's like, well, my daughter's going to be just like me, so she's going to be a psychopath. Like, kids hit other kids and they push them down, but they're usually supervised, so nothing bad happens. Like, you know, if you push a kid in the mud puddle, you find the kid and you rescue him from the mud puddle and everything works out fine.
Mm-hmm.
Rick is completely, you know, asleep at the switch. So Beth takes a kid into this Fruityland, leaves him there, never asks questions.
Yeah.
Is not involved in the other parent's life. And, you know, so this kid just, you know, could have starved in there, whatever. But then they later on in the episode where he shows a box of, like, all the stuff that Beth has had him invent as a child. And it's like, simultaneously, Rick's putting in so much effort that you know he cares about Beth, but also, why is Beth asking for this crazy-ass shit?
Yeah.
You know, it was easy. For Rick, I guess it was easy to give her what she wants exactly than to parent her.
Yeah.
And say, like, why do you want a whip that makes people like you? And
yeah, like, give her what she's directly asking for, but not the thing that she really needs, right?
Right. And she's got this, like, the arc where she's going through this adventure and trying to do the right thing, and then the end she ends up committing mass murder and realize, like, am I evil? I thought that was a great way to further explore and flesh out the character of Beth, and then it led to her existential crisis of thinking she's the clone left behind.
Yeah, that was good.
And my favorite scene is where, you know, she's on the phone with Rick and it's like, you know, am I the clone? And he's like, no. And he, like, comforts her, and he goes, like, wait, you're not saying you're fine just because you know that if you were a clone and you achieved self-awareness, I'd have to kill you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no. And then when she puts off the phone and hyperventilates and screams, I thought that was the funniest goddamn thing.
That was great.
And then the President of the United States and Rick having ego off.
Oh, that was so good. I really enjoyed that.
I did, too. And the fact that, like, the United States, between the combination of recently possessing a bunch of alien technology and the amount of money they're willing to spend, like, can kind of sort of hang with Rick.
Right.
With their, like, ghetto, what does he call it? Their ghetto-ass, off-brand, deficit-tripling teleporter. And, like, you know, when the president is trying his hardest to kill Rick, and Rick just wants to preserve the president long enough to take a selfie, I just loved it. I just loved it.
Yeah.
And the whole, don't touch me, son. You don't have to beta. And I promise you, if you touch me, you're going to die. And there's nothing after death. It's just blackness. And the guy and he just drops dead. So good. So good.
He didn't even make a sound.
That's right. Yeah. It's terrifying. Hard to watch. Makes a great deterrent.
It was so good. And then I think they come to a point at the end of the season where things have really changed, the dynamic of that family.
Have they?
I feel like there's the potential for them, too. I mean, if you want to ask have they, then I guess you're saying Rick and Morty as a show never changes the dynamic.
I think so.
I mean, certainly they've set it up that way. Now, if they go back on it in next season, I wouldn't be surprised, because at some point they have, you know, these funny characters and these funny relationships.
Right.
But I mean, it seems to me like Rick is really the outsider in the family, not just the guy that everybody kind of worships and, you know, Jerry hates.
Well, I think it's one of those things where, like, whenever I would contemplate, like, getting back with an ex, because I think that anytime you're lonely and you're single, you start thinking, like,
I should fucking avocado-shaped alien.
No, you start thinking of, like, oh, you know, like, hey, maybe I should give me and Tina another chance because, right. Oh, she's a great... And you start thinking, like, okay, but is that just because you're lonely, or really what's changed that would make this relationship retread work? And in Beth's case, I think that you could make a convincing case that she has decided to embrace her role as mother and no longer be resentful that, you know, she raised Summer and didn't have them born and is not, you know, didn't achieve maybe everything she wanted to, because she also made Summer and Morty. I don't know that intrinsically transfers to Jerry, because Jerry's just a terrible, terrible person.
Sure.
Like, that was, like, we didn't talk about his arc in the ABCs of Beth, where he, you know, jumped way too far in his alien relationship, but he's still kind of xenophobic and racist, and he's not able to deal with that, and he's got no spine.
My favorite scene in that episode, I think, is when they're in the car, and Summer's trying to get him to admit that he's racist, and
she's like, I'll only help you if you admit it, if I want to hear you say it.
Right, and so he says it, and then he's like, now, how does that help me? Are you going to help me out? And Rick or Morty's like, yeah, she just did.
And then they get up and she's like, clean up your own mess, Dad. Yeah, and doesn't.
It's great.
That's the thing. Like, Jerry has made zero progress as a human. And the other thing is, like, I don't trust Jerry as a clone detector. Jerry would.
The force to reckon with in that family is not Jerry, right? It's Beth.
It seems like all the power runs through Beth because for whatever reason, Rick, and he'd be the first one to say it's irrational, he does love his child.
Yeah.
And his grandchildren.
And it's her. The important thing here is her change of perspective.
But I don't think that perspective, because, like, Jerry is just literally like a man-child shit to deal with. And I think that maybe one of the arcs in season 4 is she's going to realize, like, I do love my family, but I don't love you.
That's not part of it.
And we need to part ways, because he's Jerry's the fucking worst, man.
He is. No, Jerry's a miserable excuse for a human
But
being.
I wonder, because at the end where they're kind of like all like making fun of Rick, and like Rick's got that because Rick's been defeated. Like, he was going to show up and kill Jerry with the machine gun, which I thought was funny, or the semi-automatic rifle. And then he's like, well, this doesn't work. So come on, Morty. Let's go to another Earth, because we fucked this one up again. And Morty won't come with him. Mm-hmm. So then he becomes fly fishing Rick and makes peace with the U.S. president and all this stuff. He's a beaten man. But when they're all kind of laughing at him, he kind of narrows his eyes. And I wonder, because this is the season Rick kind of got defeated. Like, he started off this season destroying the Galactic government and the Citadel of Rick's just to wrest control from his family from Jerry. Mm-hmm. And at the end, without Jerry even trying, he gets completely dethroned. So does Rick go? Like what Rick does from here, I think, is going to be fascinating.
Yeah, and I think that's the important part, right? I don't think Beth's life revolves around Rick anymore. It revolves around her choices. Yeah. Like, whether that includes Jerry or not doesn't really matter, because she's made the choice to take control of her own life. And
I do think the one thing she said that was honest and accurate in that finale was, I no longer idolize you, and I'm no longer afraid that you're going to leave.
Yeah.
So I can make decisions without that being the number one thing. Like, you know, I can just push past that. And that would be interesting, because honestly, that dynamic was starting to get frayed anyway.
Yeah.
Like, the whole, like, you know, being kind of cool with endangering her children as long as Rick is happy was not – that was her kind of damage. The other thing is that it'd be really interesting to see Dan Harmon – because I think half of Dan is, like, reflected in Jerry, and half of him is reflected in Rick. And okay. It would be interesting to see, because, like, I feel like Harmon and Roiland took Rick Sanchez and led him down the path where he could be a happier person, and Rick just refused to take any of those off-ramps this season. There's like three or four times where he had an epiphany about how he could be different, and he just didn't do it.
Yeah, the one where they're the toxic versions of them, right?
Exactly right. Exactly right. The toxic version, the therapy session.
Yeah.
There was a couple others along those ways. And then I wonder if season four they'll start to – because what – Jerry's damage is fixable.
Okay.
I mean
– yeah, it'd take a lot of work, but
– right. I mean, he's got to quit being such a fucking people pleaser, and he's got to have something that he like as authentically – you know, he's got to have some – he's got to quit being such a fucking nice guy and start leading his own life, and it's going to be better for him. It's going to be better for his wife. It's going to be better for his children. There's steps you can take to do that, and I wonder if they'll show like some of that growth. And maybe the overall theme of Rick and Morty is Morty's fine, Summer's fine, Beth's fine, Jerry's fine. Rick is still an insane god that's going to be extremely powerful but ultimately unhappy his entire life.
Yeah, it could be.
But I also love the final of the so the other thing about this season was supposed to be 14 episodes long.
It was?
It took so long for them because they kept on rewriting and trying to perfect these things and kind of figure out how to integrate their new writers and come up with this process. And like Harmon gave this interview where he's like, I think – because he's aware of his reputation. Like he is got this reputation where he creates something great and then – he turns it toxic because he's always trying to outdo himself, and he turns into a creative failure. He got fired from Sarah Silverman's show. He got fired from Community. This season, like, there was all these rumors about him and Roiland butting heads and all that stuff, and he, you know, I don't think that's true, but he's like, I want to come back in season four. I think we got all these problems fixed. I want to come back in a timely fashion and deliver 14 episodes and prove it. But I guess they took this presidential episode and threw in the things about Beth and kind of turned it into a finale. But it wasn't supposed to be a finale. But I liked the Mr. Poopy Butthole.
At the end,
yeah, where he's like, you know, I got married and had kids. What'd you do in the off season? I hope you just didn't fuck around and waste your life waiting. Which, judging by the Rick and Morty subreddit, really, really hit people deep.
Yeah,
yeah. Like a lot of people are like, Jesus Christ, he's got a point. You know, like just sit around and watch old episodes and not do anything with your life. But then
hey, that's on you, not on Dan.
No. Justin. I mean, they weren't mad. They were like, yeah, you know, they had their perspective adjusted.
Gotcha.
But then people were like mining that, like, oh, he said, well, maybe next time I see you'll have a big white Christmas beer. Maybe or big white Santa Claus.
Drop season four on Christmas Day.
There'll be a Christmas episode. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, you people. If you think Justin Roiland did anything but get drunk and get in the booth and do that whole thing off the top of his head, you're fucking crazy. Having said that, yeah, a Christmas episode of Rick and Morty would be all right by me.
Maybe it's going to be a Christmas episode with only Rick and Morty's grandchildren.
So the next question I want to ask is, how did it meet your expectations? How does it stand within the Rick and Morty pantheon such as it is?
Man, I don't remember much of seasons one and two, if I'm being honest, but I really enjoyed season three. I thought, aside from maybe one episode that I didn't like and a couple that I thought were mediocre, there were a lot of really good ones.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of the opposite. I got so far into Rick and Morty and Dan Harmon's world that season three on my first analysis is a little disappointing to me.
Huh.
But if I'm honest, I think that as I watch these episodes more, because I remember thinking, like, I wasn't impressed with Rick and Morty until like the Meeseeks episode.
Okay.
And then I remember thinking a couple of episodes here and there like weren't great. Like, you know, I didn't really like Rick or Beth and Jerry's going to the marriage counselor planet and all that. But then as I watched them more, like, I didn't even like the Needful Things episode, which is where Rick squares off against the devil selling haunted artifacts.
Huh.
But now I think that's one of my favorite ones.
Yeah.
So I feel like I feel like the finale episode and like the Citadel mix-up were like top five Rick and Morty episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And overall this season, You know, it had a lot more continuity, which I think is a tougher thing to do. I have no idea where to place it.
Okay.
Because
okay.
It's like I'm pretty sure my first impressions are going to be wrong.
Gotcha.
And it's not this show's fault for not failing to deliver when I'm stacking it up against all my favorite memories of Harmontown, all of Community, mm-hmm. and both seasons of Rick and Morty that I've probably seen 10, 15 times now apiece. So
yeah, that's tough.
Yeah. But I like it, and I'm looking forward to season 5. I hope it's not 2 years away. But
you're not going to sit around and waste your life until it comes
out.
Not.
I'm going to keep. I'm going to keep living my life, man. I'm not going to let Mr. Poopy Butthole down.
All right.
Shall we move into Star Trek?
Yeah.
Territory
for sure.
Shall we make a new discovery?
I would love to do an a cappella version of the theme song with you here right now, but the theme song, in my opinion, is kind of lame.
Yeah, until the last few bars where it comes back to Star Trek.
Right, I think they know it's fucking lame because they included the original Star Trek theme in there.
Yeah.
They knew. They realized, oh shit, we've got nothing here, guys. Nothing for the fans to latch onto as far as creativity or memorability or in this song. So, but fuck, I don't know, throw the original theme in there.
Right.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
I don't like the theme song at all, and I don't really like the theme overall, like the intro.
Oh, okay.
I don't like the visuals. I don't like...
It's very much...
It reminds me a lot of papers. Are they going for like maps, charts?
It reminds me a lot of Enterprises.
Yeah.
It reminds me a lot of like, you know, Destiny's aesthetic. There's a lot of this... Or like the Avengers movies does this a lot too, where it's all technical schematic stuff and like, oh, Captain America's shield and here's Iron Man's face and here's Hawkeye's arrows.
The thing is, there's nothing inspiring about that.
No.
Like, the original Star Trek and Next Generation had these broad sweeping views of the universe, you know, and this amazing ship firing off into distant galaxies.
Right.
This has fucking two astronaut gloves touching, and I get it. That's like supposed to be symbolic of the peacemaking missions, but come on. Do something more inspiring than a forgettable theme song and some cheesy, I don't know, papercraft stuff.
So I think we're getting off into the weeds a bit. Can we talk about our general impressions? Like, does this feel like Star Trek? Do you like this Star Trek?
So with some small gripes overall in the feel of it, yeah, I think it's a pretty good attempt to do a modern Star Trek.
Okay.
I enjoyed watching it for sure.
When I watched the first pilot episode, I remember being a little disappointed because it seemed like it was setting up a preposterous situation that they can't ever possibly pay off.
Yeah.
But then I remembered all the other Star Trek pilots and how unabashedly shitty they are. Like Encounter at Farpoint is a tough watch. The Star Trek pilot that they actually filmed is, you know, that they then reworked into, like, you know, some trial of Christopher Pike later on. Borderline unwatchable. Deep Space Nine, okay. Voyager, okay. Like, there's never been, like, in anyone, if we're being honest, of all of us Trekkers are being honest, no one sits down and watch a Star Trek pilot and like, holy shit, this is amazing. This is like, this is the pilot episode of Breaking Bad. What you do is you're a science fiction nerd starved for any kind of mainstream content and you latch onto it and hope it's eventually worth your time to watch.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. This is the best Star Trek pilot ever. This is the best first three episodes I've ever seen in a Star Trek.
I have to agree. Yeah.
And in the first two episodes, I'm like, okay, that's great. How does it stack up against the golden age of television, period? And
oh, that's a little rougher.
That's a little rougher, yeah. But it's tough because there's a lot of silly shit going on, but just kind of like when we were talking about in the Blade Runner review last night, that how do you be – it's very tough being a futurist in the 21st century. How do you then, like, you know, like this fungus-based warp drive seems like patent nonsense.
Sure.
But, you know, it is a little more Star Warsy than a Star Trek. But, like, maybe instead of increasingly arcane technobabble, you got to just go fucking Dungeons & Dragons with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely not the thing that tripped me up, the fungus-based travel.
I wrinkled my nose at it, but I'm like, but how, yeah. I mean, how is it objectively worse than transwarp waves?
It's not. Or it's not. Lithium crystals.
It's not.
Or like,
it's not.
No.
It's all bullshit.
Right.
Why am I getting hung
or
up
transporters.
On unfamiliar bullshit?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I take for granted that you can go faster than light in a warp bubble and that you can matter transport everybody over. And sometimes you can reflect that off of swamp gas and split William Riker into two people. But I'm not. And also, no Star Trek has ever understood how the theory of evolution works. Uh-huh. So Picard can get sprayed with gas
de-evolved.
And turn into a lizard monkey, and
right.
None of that shit makes sense. So why am I getting hung up on it? And the result is, and the answer is, I shouldn't. It's dumb to let myself do that.
Yeah, those are not the gripes I have, certainly. But I do like the look of it. I don't know when this takes place. Do you have any idea, like, the time span between the original Star Trek and this one?
I think it's like 15 years before the original series.
Fuck me. Okay, well then the visuals just, their tech doesn't seem to line up.
It's hard. But the thing is that a legitimate gripe? Because if Gene Roddenberry could make his ships look this cool, he would have.
Like, sure. I feel like it is, because you can set this show whenever you want. You know? I don't know. I think if you wanted to make a show that looked like this, mm-hmm. you should set it farther in the future off of Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And I get what they're trying to do here is they want to go directly into the Klingon War.
Yeah, also, if this feels, remember that when Abrams took over,
yeah.
he threw away all the continuity.
Sure.
So, like, this is 15 years before the Chris Pine Star Trek.
Okay.
And you can, they got.
I can see that.
Tilted camera angles and lens flares out the fucking ass.
Yeah.
So it's like not 15 years before William Shatner's velour horrific costumes. It's 15 years before the new Star Trek movie, which mm-hmm. makes it a little bit, I guess, more acceptable.
But I thought there was a departure point on those.
Oh, yeah, you're right, because it's Spock's time travel is what yeah. made that pop. But still...
So you couldn't back and say this all changed.
Yeah, but all that stuff was still higher tech before Spock time traveled, you know? Like, that shit...
That's true, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
But that didn't make any sense, so...
But that's just because they made it in the 21st century, and yeah. they had much better special effects.
Right.
So it's like... Because I think Doctor Who is a little too enslaved to its past. Like,
okay.
you know, instead of updating the Dalek to actually look like something modern, they try to, you know, still cling to that. And it's like, you know, same thing with Battlestar. Like, Battlestar looks much more modern, but they also had enough of, like, the throwback that I think Star Wars does a better job, but that's mm-hmm. just a pure... It's same thing with the Klingons. I really had a problem with them redoing the Klingon look.
Really? Okay.
Because I don't feel like the old Klingons, like, it's, you know, it's one thing that, you know, the old series Klingons who just had some eyeshadow and half of their eyebrows shaved off.
Yeah.
That's one thing. But, like, I felt like the Klingons from the motion picture onward were in a good place.
Yeah.
And I honestly think the new Klingons, like, they're so fucking made up that it's really affecting their actors' ability to emote.
Yeah, and for me to understand them when they speak, it
yes.
sounds like they're talking through rubber.
Yeah,
because
they are.
Yeah,
like the only thing they can show emotion with is their mouth, their eyebrows, their eyes, their everything is so heavily made up that they can't. It's like fucking Admiral Akbar. You know?
You think of the Klingons in like Next Generation or the Klingons in Deep Space Nine.
Right,
they were able to do stuff, convey emotion, anger.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
These guys just look intimidating, certainly, and I don't think the look is bad.
No, it's not
it's
bad.
It's certainly just different.
It's just like if they're going to be the primary antagonist, I need to be able to connect with what they're feeling. And maybe they're going like, well, these are aliens, and you're not supposed to understand their language and culture. But I also, a lot of people I noticed on our forums, and I agreed, what's with the subtitles? Like,
so,
those subtitles are a legibility and readability nightmare.
Are they?
I think so. The weird serif Klingon-y kind of, you know, like they're going for, like, not only are these subtitles, they're alien subtitles, and I don't like it. I think they're hard to make out and read.
Okay, I have some problems with that streaming platform, but we'll get there.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe I want to talk a little bit meta here about the 21st century streaming TV shows.
Okay.
I think subtitles is a mistake for that crowd because I think you're going to have a lot of people background watching and binge watching. And they will not be able to do that because the Klingons take up a lot of screen time in these first couple episodes. And if you choose to, hey, background watch this, and maybe you would eventually become a fan and start foreground watching it, but you're not going to have any idea what's going on because you're looking at your phone, you're playing a game or something while Star Trek is on in the background, and you don't know what the Klingons are doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a mistake, and I'm hoping, because they can speak English. They can speak...
Mm-hmm.
You know, standard, whatever it is. Maybe they're going to lean more heavily into that in the future, but if they keep with the Klingons talking Klingon all the time, it could be a problem for binge like background watchers.
Yeah, I don't mind. That's like, to me,
I don't mind, but
the same claim
it might hurt them.
The same as, well, you're right in that, like, but I kind of like this Narcos. Like, you got Narcos you can't background watch primarily because they don't fucking translate shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's all subtitles. So it's like, now is Star Trek like the crowd to watch Star Trek urbane enough that they'll put up with the subtitles? That's an open question.
I don't mind it as someone who's going to foreground watch this thing.
But... Right. What did you think about... Let's talk about the cast. Sonequa, I think is her name. Martin Green, who you might better know as Sasha from The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Plays the primary primary character, Michael, who is another...
She's a weird version
of
Spock.
Because she's being raised by Ambassador Sarek, Spock's dad.
Yeah, but she's a human?
And also, Spock should be in this continuity. He
right.
should be slightly young. He should be, he should probably already be in the Federation.
Yeah.
He should be in his mid-20s Vulcan. Maybe Spock was 100 years old when he was in the old series.
I don't remember.
I honestly can't remember. But either way, Spock should be around in this universe and Sarek. But he raised this because she got orphaned in some kind of war atrocity and she's raised on Vulcan. It's yet another. But here's the thing. Star Trek has always wallowed in essentially human supremacy. The humans are the best culture, and all the Federation needs to kind of get on the human bandwagon. If there's any other, like, Worf always, like, he's seen through the prism of how to reconcile his Klingonness with his humanity, and Data's always trying to be more human, and Spock's trying to be more human, and here we have a girl... raised on Vulcan, who, like, 12 years into her commission, you can almost not even really tell.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I thought it would be more interesting to show maybe not the superiority of Vulcan, but, like, the differences not being clearly, like, oh, well, you know, like, Michelle Yeoh's patting her on her head, like, just wait until your humanity kicks in, dear. You'll be okay. Mm-hmm. Like, that's so... opposite of the spirit of Star Trek in a weird way. Like, let's explore an alien culture and maybe see how it compares favorably to humanity.
Yeah, there's a lot in this show that I think is counter to the feeling, the vibe, and the message of Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
I really... We'll get back to the characters here in a second. I think Sonequa does an awesome job.
Mm-hmm.
She's really, really good as Michael.
She's very watchable. She's a fascinating character.
Yeah. But this conflict that she has with the chief engineer, I guess, on this project, like this biophysics guy.
Yeah.
Who's researching this fungus drive.
Yeah.
It's not even that he's the pacifist. It's just that there's conflict between him and the fucking captain of the ship.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't see that in any of the other Star Treks. Mm-hmm. You saw, like... Okay, maybe Kira was a little testy at times, right? But she's a Bajoran. She's defending her people. Like, she's not part of this culture.
And
this
Sisko
culture.
Wasn't her
and
boss.
And she's a very recent adoption, right.
She was the liaison between the Federation and a Bajoran culture.
Right. Now you've got Starfleet against Starfleet, which I hate.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think the calling card of Star Trek is that they work as a unit and they are united and that's what makes them so good and effective.
But this is Starfleet at war, which has always been kind of a tension between the black badges, the covert, like, versus like, because that's what tests your high-minded ideals, right? It's one thing when
but we start off with a fucking mutiny.
Yeah,
I don't like that. I really don't like it,
especially since it didn't make sense. Because the second episode, I do like the fact that she got court-martialed and sent to prison.
Yes.
Like that felt like, because I thought that was going to be like this thing where the captain just looks the other way and maybe she'll die and become the captain. Like, if she doesn't face a consequence for this, I'm out in the second episode.
Yeah.
But what was weird is like a Sarek, you know, talked to her and gave her counsel that she interpreted as hijacking her starship and going to war against the Klingons. And then the very next episode, she's like, you know what? We can't do this. We need to capture this guy because we can't make him a martyr. Ends up, you know, doing this two-woman commando raid and getting the captain killed because, of course.
Yeah.
Like, none of that really made a lot of sense, the idea that they're going to, you know, cripple this Klingon starship, board it, and take their leader captive. Like, why did they think that was going to work?
I don't know why they thought it would work. I think it's a better idea than making him a Klingon martyr.
Yeah, you know, sure.
So I think
they needed Michelle Yeoh to die, and I got briefly excited.
That's really what it is.
When it said guest, you know, like special guest star Michelle Yeoh, and I'm like, oh well, she's gonna fucking die in the pilot. That's what that means. And then she survived. I'm like, well, this would be cool because I really liked Michelle Yeoh as a captain. She dies in the second episode. Damn it.
Right.
But then the new captain, Jason Isaacs, I have a hard time complaining about him.
Yeah, me too. Now, I actually like all of the characters minus one.
Well, so there's a lot of consternation on our forums about Jason Isaac being the villain of the show. Is he the villain?
No, I don't think so.
I think he's certainly not typical Starfleet, but I don't think he's going to be the mustache twirling villain. I think he is going to try to win this war by any means necessary, which could lead him down a villainous path. But yeah, I like the conflict between him and the research scientist.
Well, I like. Okay, I mean, yeah,
the research scientist is following his orders, but
he is
very much under duress.
But he essentially tells him to go fuck himself at one point, like.
I mean, he starts to, but then the captain says, hey, I'm the captain. This isn't democracy, and he falls in line.
Yeah.
But then also they hint that he's doing some work to kind of sabotage or sandbag the – but that maybe not. Maybe he just wants to be safe because, you know, his friend, which – I don't know if he's – did they establish whether they're best friends or they're lovers or
– I don't know.
The other starship that got destroyed because they pushed things a little too far.
Yeah, I'm not sure what.
And somehow grew a mushroom bowl, I think is what that thing is.
Yeah, the way they helixed those people was pretty fucked
up. That was fucked up. And Cecily was watching. She's like, I don't know a lot about Star Trek, but this is pretty hardcore for Star Trek. I'm like,
for sure.
Oh, yeah. This is not your dad. This is not your father's Star Trek.
No.
Like, I watched Star Trek as a 6 and 7 year old boy. My son's probably about ready to handle this Star Trek, but 3 years ago, no fucking way.
Yeah.
He'd been scared to death.
The captain is interesting. It helps that he is not pursuing a weapon, that he's pursuing a means of teleportation, essentially.
I do like his speech about, like, forget the war application. This thing could change everything.
Yeah.
Like it could redefine Starfleet's role as explorers. And I'm like, well, spoiler alert, it's not going to work. Because I've seen the rest of your all history, and you're still schlepping around in warp drive.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I didn't view him as a villain because I think he's on mission and he's not creating some kind of super weapon.
Yeah.
You know, he's not looking to exterminate the Klingons. He's looking to, I guess, exploit supremacy over them.
To beat them. And,
yeah.
And I also like the idea that to the Klingons, you know, they're like, they're the Starfleet's biggest lies. We come in peace because they're here to destroy our civilization.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they won't take our lives, but they'll take our culture and our honor and everything that means any. That's super relevant almost in any stage in human history. That's always the big fear.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see how those things shake out. Like, what the overall idea of this series is going to be.
Yeah. Because the other thing is I was hoping that maybe we'd get back to a Star Trek that does exploration and wonder. And it doesn't seem like we're going to. This seems like it's even the most tightly plotted and narratively driven Star Trek ever, which maybe that's cool. And also, I don't know that they can do the random planet that's got a weird, you know, an allegory for a troublesome piece of politics or culture.
It might come off as cheesy now.
I mean, I think it always did, but like, there's only so many of those stories you can tell. And between the old series and the Next Generation, they told them all.
You think so?
Yeah. Hmm. Like, what could they, like, they want to tackle, you know, religious bigotry? They've done that. Did they want to tackle, like, maybe they could talk about transgender politics, but is that any different than when Riker went to the unisex planet and made one of the androgynous people fall in love with him and she got, like, I mean, that shit's been done, you know?
Sure.
So maybe we're stuck with just start telling other kind of golden age style stories in the Star Trek universe. I don't know. It's a little sad, but
they have the best mechanism in Star Trek history for that, though. This fungus drive could give them access instantly to crazy new planets, you know? So, like, it'd be a shame to waste it almost.
When he put Lieutenant Michael or whatever her, I guess she's prisoner Michael now, in that pod with the mushroom stuff. Mm-hmm. Did she actually physically travel those distances, or was it like on literally on shrooms kind of thing?
I mean, she must have. She must have. Otherwise, what are
Why
they pursuing
would it be
here?
Impressive.
Yeah.
That's,
I
don't know.
That's
it could
how
be
I read
like
it,
a Stranger
certainly.
Things thing where this would still be incredibly useful for intelligence gathering, mm-hmm. even if you couldn't, like, if you can only like psychically travel those distances, that's still pretty amazing, and you could handily win a war. It's not as cool as being able to take a whole starship anywhere you want, but.
Yeah. I have a lot of questions, just so many questions. One of the biggest ones, I think, is what exactly are they doing with Michael? Because everyone in the show is blaming her for the war.
Yeah.
We clearly see it is not her fault. The Klingons were hell-bent on attacking from the moment they appeared on the screen. Mm-hmm. So, and I get that she mutinied, but she did not cause this war. And yet everyone is treating her as if she does. What are they trying to do here with her is my, like, number one question.
I think it might be a parable of the fog of war and how, like, when you look back at, like, any kind of major war with, like, the United States or in the Cold War, you're always trying to think what the other guy's doing. And you don't mm-hmm. know. So you assume kind of the worst because that's a prudent thing to do. But then that becomes a self, like, it's not like, well, in the worst case scenario, the Russians will do this, they'll lead to World War III, and 80% of the population will. It becomes, that's what the Russians want.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And I wonder if, because the Klingon side is so impenetrable, and they don't know that what their the ulterior motives of this Kallus Reborn guy, that they're putting all this blame on her because that's the only thing they can see. And you're, like, kind of myopic. You're operating in this world where you've got, like, in a famous Don Rumsfeld quote, like, you've got knowns, known unknowns, and unknown unknowns, and you don't know what you don't know, and, like, they might be exploring that a little bit. Okay. Also, it's just, like, weird to see, like, a Starfleet officer just completely on the outs. Like, they've had that before in, like, Ensign Ro Laren or Commander Chakotay, but that's instantly papered over.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh yeah, you led a rebellion against the Federation, but now you're just essentially going to be a plug-and-play Starfleet officer for the purposes of our ongoing story.
Yeah.
Same thing with Kira. Like, they did the same. They, like, they defang them unless they want to, once a season, make a big deal about their inner loyalty struggle.
Right.
But,
right. When she hooks up with other former Bajoran freedom fighters.
Right.
Once every two seasons.
But I don't know. I you're right. I don't know why Michael is special. Is it she's special because she's got the resourcefulness and flexibility of a human combined with the mastery and discipline of a Vulcan? I don't know.
I'm just curious to see if they're trying to say something about finger pointing and blame with that character, or if they're just simply they have an idea in their head and they're running with it, like the writers.
Yeah. Are we going to let Federation, the Starfleet officers, off the hook for beaming over to a known biohazard ship without any kind? And they took great pains to show us they have full-blown environmental suits, spacesuits, armored suits. What the hell are they doing beaming over to there and breathing spores with a bunch of rampaging bull mushroom creatures going around, and they're just fucking in their skivvies? I don't get it.
Yeah. I mean, they did know.
I mean, they knew what the other team was researching, but they also knew it got away from them and blew it the fuck up.
So I, what exactly happened there? Because that monster came through whatever portal they opened up, right?
I guess, yeah.
They went to somewhere so distant they didn't know about this thing, and it came through. And at the same time, the experiment went awry and twisted them all up like spiral people?
I don't, I'm not sure what did what, because I don't think that creature did that.
No, I don't think so.
Of them. I thought that was like a part of the out-of-control mushroom warp drive process.
And then the Klingons came over? Man, that ship was just fucked from the start.
Yeah, that was also comical. Like, so you're telling me Klingon culture has put your finger to your lips and shh as a universal sign for be quiet?
Yeah, they do.
That's because the precursors see... Yeah, I don't know. That was a silly scene.
Yeah.
But you're right. Yeah, the Klingons are over there. So the Klingons have just discovered cloak drive. The Federation's on the cusp of... mushroom drive. The Klingons were trying to steal the mushroom drive.
With the cloak drive. I think so.
And they ran into the mushroom bowl that Gordum. I don't know. That's the thing. It's a mystery. It is. It seems like it's set to be a season-long mystery. I feel like that the Star Trek writers very much watched Expanse and took a lot of notes from it.
Okay.
When you think about the bioweapon and the uneasy war footing at the beginning of the series and the different cultural misunderstandings, like a lot of this feels like a Star Trekification of the Expanse, which isn't a bad thing. Expanse is great. I just wonder if when we see the season as a whole, if it'll feel a little bit redundant.
Okay. Some of the other characters that I really, really like... Saru.
I love Lieutenant Saru.
Saru is awesome.
He is got like that, like Abe Sapien, Hellboy, otherworldly quality to his delivery. Hmm. Like he's a genuinely alien.
Yeah.
And I like that about him. And I like how tough he is. Like when he told Michael, like, look, I don't know how to feel about you because you're bright, but you're also dangerous. You're like a mad dog that I can't trust anymore. But I will tell you this, I'm going to do a better job protecting my captain than you, which we know that Saru seems like he's a pretty much idealist Starfleet officer, and he's working for someone that might be shading outside the lines.
Yeah.
Like, that seems like a lot of built-in conflict for his character.
It does. And I like just the basic premise of his race, I guess, his species.
Is there a basic premise of theirs?
Yeah. Their whole planet, their whole society revolves around, is a binary society, as he calls it, the binary food chain, where he is bred and developed and farmed to be prey, to be food, essentially, for the other people who – the other members of that society who are the predators. And they eat their fellow –
How did I miss this?
I don't know.
Which
this
episode
is like
was
episode
this?
One.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, where he's – where they first encounter the Klingon ship, and he's like, oh, here's an explanation of my entire societal culture.
Okay. That's the one we watched together, but I was actually taking notes, and that's I shouldn't ever take notes the first time through.
Yeah. I guess there are 200 years from now still Beatles cover bands. I don't know.
Yeah, Star Trek loves their classical music.
Isn't that technically what orchestras are? Like when they're playing Beethoven's Fifth or
whatever. Yeah, right.
Like, yeah, there are cover bands. They're just
right.
Not in the way you think of them.
That's the thing. That was the common complaint about the Next Generation Deep Space Nine era, that their idea, like, nothing past the 17th century ever made it. Like, where is Sisko listening to Run DMC? Why is Riker listening to early 20th century jazz? Why doesn't he listen to Megadeth or... You know, I like that they're kind of... little expanding out of that.
Yeah. The biggest question I have of all, though.
Wait, but tell me, I want to go back to this Lieutenant Saru.
Okay.
So did they stop all this cycle of predation when they joined the Federation? Or is he going to serve his commission and go back and get eaten?
I don't know. That's a really good question. They don't address it at all.
I like how his spine's raised on the back of his neck when, you know, he had a premonition of danger.
Yeah, in certain circumstances. That's the thing. Like, you talk about cultural, assimilation. The Federation is not very tolerant of that stuff, right? to a large degree. Like, they're probably not going to allow something like that to go on.
Oh, no wonder Doug Jones Saru reminds me Abe Sapien. He played Abe Sapien in Hellboy and Hellboy 2.
Okay.
Makes a lot of sense.
There you go.
But they also have the Prime Directive.
Sure.
So if the Federation comes and is like, okay, you want to join the Federation? They're like, yes, well, you can't eat each other. And they're like, but that's the way we like it.
Yeah.
I don't know what the Federation does.
I guess it's called General Order 1 here.
But that's more of like pre-warp civilizations. I think Federation, probably like the same way the United States and other Western democracies try to put pressure on other less woke regimes. Like, you can't make them do it, but you can put sanctions on them and not give them full faith and credit with the Federation.
I'm interested. Members of Starfleet.
Yeah, I am interested in seeing how that all plays out. Can we talk about the CBS All Access
as a
online
service
thing?
Yeah, please.
They're damn lucky that they didn't do the Netflix model and drop this all in once, because there is nothing. Like, I actually am somewhat offended that when I boot up this service on my PlayStation, I get the fucking Big Bang Theory shoved up my ass. Like, I would watch this in one weekend and then instantly cancel. As it is, they're going to get 2 to 3 months out of me. But I think... Huh. I mean, they had like 12 to 15 million people watching this when it premiered on CBS, because they showed the first two episodes on PBS or CBS on Sunday night.
That's a lot.
And then there's no way 10% of that traffic goes over to CBS All Access.
I can't imagine, no.
Like, I think CBS traded a potential crossover appeal hit to try to prop up this online service that nobody wants. Because CBS is, for better or worse, the network of old people. Mm-hmm. And my dad, there's no fucking way I'm going to get my dad to install CBS All Access. My dad's a Star Trek fan. He would like to watch it. If it was on CBS, it would be fucking appointment television for him. But he's not going to, because he's not going to pay $8 a month to get CBS and install it on his non-existent PlayStation or Roku or Chromecast. If he can't get it through his satellite set-top box, he's not going to fucking watch it. Hell, he doesn't listen to my podcast, because the idea of having an app to play radio is stupid to him.
So that's interesting. I'm not sure how I feel about this. And if what you're saying is true, that CBS is essentially the network for old people, they've got a problem. I don't know what's on CBS, which is why I say that.
Well, there you go. How old are you?
Not that old, I guess.
The defense rests.
Okay. So I'm not officially old until I start watching CBS?
Yeah.
On terrestrial TV?
When you start realizing that half of your TV watching is NCIS, Sheboygan, and 3.5 women, and 2 men, half a girl, and a pizza parlor, and start then yeah, you're old. You're officially old.
Okay, good. I'm still young. That's a close one. So that's a problem, right? If they've got the old people network and everything is moving away from old people's consumption of television,
yeah,
how do you get there? How do you match the Netflix and the HBO? I think Star Trek is their best shot at it.
Or they just continue to be...
Until they die?
And they continue...
Until they wither and die?
They use new compelling content to lure people back to watch their shit.
But if old people are the only ones watching...
And then they package it up on Netflix, and they patch it up on Amazon and Hulu and make their money that way.
You just listed a bunch of shows that no young people who are hip on the internet stuff are watching.
But Star Trek is. That's the way they can start turning it around. But it's like... Fucking every 5 to 10 years, Hardee's decides, you know what? We look around our restaurant, and it's just a bunch of old fuckers... Eating biscuits and drinking coffee until noon and then leaving. Mm-hmm. Let's get some young, sexy models in here, and let's make Hardee's hip, and let's like shove a burrito joint up its ass.
Yeah.
And then 5 years later, you go in, and who's in Hardee's at? You know, it's a bunch of old fuckers eating biscuits and drinking coffee. Mm-hmm. Like, that's who you are. You should embrace it, you know? And like,
yeah, but if that's a death spiral, why are you going to embrace the death spiral?
Because, you know, make money. It's like everything dies. Everything dies. You're misunderstanding. I'm saying instead of taking a service that your old audience is going to eschew and not be able to use,
mm-hmm.
take the new young science fiction hit and use that as a wedge to start change. It's like when, you know, before AMC got Mad Men and Breaking Bad, they were the channel of rerun movies that no one watched.
Right.
And they, for better or worse, changed their history by getting these young, hip hits, critical darlings, and now they're stuck on The Walking Dead's the jock. But CBS takes the Star Trek as a way to launch a new, younger form of television to slowly bridge that, you know, get into the millennials and the Gen Xers' pocketbooks and mindshare, to just try to force them to do this.
I feel you on that, but I think you can't take the slow route sometimes. Like, we are so far advanced now beyond where Breaking Bad was when they first started in internet streaming television.
But Star Trek's a huge
property.
If
you take 15 years to do this, you're fucked.
Yeah.
I mean, fucked, man.
I don't know that they're fucked because they have a lot of money and a huge audience, and they will for, you know, probably a decade to come. But I just feel like the problem
Maybe
with,
they should have rebranded. I don't know. But
the problem with these online services is they are appealing to cord cutters, but they're rapidly reaching this point where the reason people cut cords is for cost. I'm not going to pay $120 a month for
cost and convenience. It's
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, if I'm in a situation where I have to get 16 different online services bleeding me from $5 to $15 a month, I might as well go back to the fucking teat.
Well, but you lose the convenience.
Or I can just stop. I can just stop doing it all. You know, like I'm going to pick the, like the, you know, to me, I could probably, if it wasn't for me podcasting, I could, if it was just A. Ron Hubbard Civilian, I would have Netflix and HBO Now.
Yep.
And fuck everything else.
Me too.
I'd on Amazon, because I get that with Prime free.
Sure, yeah.
But everything else could go, like Hulu, go fuck yourself. AMC, FX, FX, all
this
go fuck yourself.
This is what I mean about being too slow, though.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is probably an argument for like a dedicated podcast, because we could talk for hours on this.
Right. But it's a disruptive thing, but it's like the CBS is a day late and a dollar short with the disruption. And none of their shows really have an online hip crowd cachet that's going to drive, like, in a way that, like, maybe Netflix and Hulu being the first in the market can, and HBO because they're generally the best.
And my argument is, with the exception of Star Trek, I think the people who watch Star Trek are hip enough to get in on the online streaming stuff. And if they ever have a shot at it, this might be the one. But
yeah.
And they're taking it, and I don't know if it's going to pay off. I don't know if it's going to work, but they're taking that shot.
I would love to know what – I wish we had online information
stats,
about like who's watching this and all that, because
– Right. That doesn't come from the mouth of the people who want it to be successful.
Yeah. And I would think that if – I would think that if 12, if I would think that if it was a big hit, we would have heard it by now.
Yeah,
like CBS would tout a big rating success.
They've been saying they're satisfied with the number of people who've come over.
Well, that's
but
good.
I think it's all about retention. What
that's
happens when Star Trek is off the air?
Because you know what Bald Move's doing to their account after it's off the air? Canceling
it. Yeah,
and we might come back to season
else.
Two. Mm. But like, I really could care less about Two and a Half Men and How I Met Your Mother and The Big Bang Show. I can't even believe the fucking Big Bang Show is still on.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's I don't watch it.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not.
You know,
watch,
the thing that
I watch
AMC,
CBS for football, and every time they advertise the upcoming stuff, I'm like, I can't believe this shit's on.
Right.
And if you like it,
and the people
I'm
watch
not,
it,
I'm not shitting on you. Like I watch plenty of bullshit, stupid stuff too.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it doesn't appeal to me, and I don't know. I personally don't know anyone other than my father, who regularly consumes stuff that's on CBS. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's not relevant to me or anyone that I know.
Right.
In my age and social bracket.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. If the thing that strikes me about it is like AMC, when they realized what they had on their hands with Breaking Bad, leaned into it and they said, okay, we're going to have stuff to keep you on AMC.
Right.
Season after season after season. It's not just going to be come back next year, I hope, for Breaking Bad.
Right, right, right.
So if CBS were smart, they'd hit you with something as soon as Star Trek goes off the air.
And
that's going to appeal to those fans.
Like, do you feel like that sometimes, like, I don't think the Golden Age is going to necessarily go away, but do you feel like we're in for like a video game crash where there are so many channels with so many marquee products that literally no one can watch them all, and like individually, like the way the economic pie is split, they're not profitable and of themselves. So, like, if every channel has their, like, Mad Men that they're trying to get off the ground and there's 30 of them happening, let alone the just insane amount of content coming out of Netflix and Amazon, at what point does this just crash and you're left with, like, one or two? It's going to be, like, I feel like this is going to collapse into, like, an Xbox-Sony ecosystem mm-hmm. where you're going to have a few, like I can't imagine a world where Netflix doesn't survive. Amazon's probably going to survive. Maybe Hulu makes it, but I don't know about some of these other shows.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, I loved American Gods, but I haven't been on Stars since. In yeah. fact, I was not even and sure Showtime? If it was Sundance or Stars. And Showtime, oh my God, poor Showtime.
Yeah, I've never watched Showtime. Yeah. They had Homeland for a while, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was
Boardwalk Empire. No, that was HBO.
Nope, it was also Master yeah. Sex. I watched that oh, for right. a couple seasons.
Yeah, they really tried to step up their game for a
Ray
while.
Donovan. Yeah, there's. I mean, it's, and that's the thing. Like, I'm sure there's the Showtime fans like, "Fuck you guys, Ray Donovan's dope."
Yeah,
I'm like,
no,
okay,
I'm sure
maybe
great
it
stuff.
Is, but
is it as dope?
No human being can watch the amount of TV that's being produced.
Yeah,
and it's. I don't know if it's sustainable. Just like nobody could play all the video games, all 3 million copies of E.T. that's buried out in the desert. Like, Atari went bankrupt, Coleco bankrupt, like, Sega. Yeah. Sega doesn't really exist except for as a software publisher now, living on their IP.
I think Nintendo's going to step in and start making TV when the crash comes, resurrect it.
Nintendo's
like
got their
the
own
80s.
Goddamn problems.
Do they?
I think so. I don't know if you can...
if having billions of dollars in the bank and a new hit console on their hands is a problem.
Is the
printing
Switch a
money
hit console?
With classics.
Is Switch a hit console?
It's more of a hit than the Wii U was. We'll say that.
No, that's true.
But that's for another podcast.
And they can keep printing money as long as people are willing to shell out money for their old shit.
I think the biggest problem we're looking for is how old these fucking fortune cookies he's eating are. Because he talks about his family having a business before the Utopia was installed.
Oh, yeah. The famous Isaac's Cookie Company.
Right. I can't, like, how long ago was the Utopia formed when they decided, yeah, we have all the energy we need, nobody needs want for anything, and mm-hmm. the cookie business went out of business.
Right. Yeah.
30 years?
I can
50, 100?
I can matter replicate cookies, dude. Maybe that's what he's doing. He's putting into this ship's computer the old recipe, like Earl Grey hot.
Okay.
He's got Isaac's
I hadn't
cookie.
Considered that.
Isaac's
yeah.
cookie, happy fortune.
With a wrapper and everything.
Isaac Cookie, Fortune, it makes me question my life's decision.
Fortune random.
The other thing is NCC 1031 is the call letters for Discovery.
Okay.
Can we call it the USS Trick or Treat? Can we get like USS Halloween or USS 31, like can we make something out of its Halloween date?
The warp nacelles are orange instead of blue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or they got like painted to look like a. You know how they used to paint like grinning teeth, tiger teeth on bombers and shit. Like uh-huh. just make a jack o' lantern face on the top of the saucer.
Big witch hat on top. The dome over
the
bridge.
The nacelles
are
replaced by broomsticks. It's not mushroom drive, broomstick drive.
Oh, yeah.
Witchcraft drive is where it's at.
Barking up the wrong tree, Isaacs.
You need straight up warlocks in space. Go talk to Bungie. They've got a bunch on loan.
They do.
Yeah, but I thought that when I saw NCC 1031, I'm like, huh, Halloween. All right.
Yeah.
USS Jack-O-Lantern. I don't know. There's got to be some kind of fan name for it. Discovery's a pretty cool starship name.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah.
And
you got to go
guess
away from
their
Enterprise.
Mission. Yeah. I didn't really like the Glenn all that much. Is it an astronaut reference?
What is Discovery?
Glenn? No.
Glenn? Yeah. Oh, yeah, it probably would be, wouldn't it?
I suppose so, yeah.
And Discovery is also his shuttle name.
Okay.
Or was a shuttle name.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. That's kind of cool, too. Hmm. But yeah, I don't know, like, how they're going to square her, like, Michael's legal status, and how often are we going to see Sarek talking to her over the time-space continuum? Like, is that going to be a recurring gag? I have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Also, I have a question like how she got out of her prison ship. She opened up a 1 meter hole to blow her out, but then the starship mm-hmm. opened up an equal and opposite 1 meter hole. So shouldn't she have gotten blown back? Like, shouldn't she still be uh-huh. stuck in space and dead? physics doesn't work that way.
Yeah, no, you're right. She should have stopped right in the middle.
Right, yeah. She should have gotten like, this is going to work. And then when the starship opened up the other thing.
Fuck you, Newton.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you have anything? What else are we going to talk about today?
I'm just excited to have a new Star Trek, I think.
Yeah, and again, as is our want, maybe we've talked too much shit about it to belie how much we enjoyed it. But again, head and shoulders, this is the best three-episode start to any Star Trek ever.
Yeah, I'm way more excited than when I first watched Voyager or Enterprise.
And the cast
my
is
God.
Impressive. Like, yeah. I mean, you know, everybody, like Patrick Stewart, you can't argue with his acting chops, and I think everybody mm-hmm. else, on balance, maybe the Next Generation is the best Star Trek cast ever.
I think so.
But this is a pretty good cast.
It is.
And bigger, probably more bank. I mean, Jason Isaacs is the biggest name that's ever been in a Star Trek.
I gotta think so.
From the jump, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure people could disagree with that, but I don't know who else like. Avery Brooks was a minor bit player in like some 80s television. Like I don't know. Patrick Stewart, again, he was in Dune. He was
done
well-regarded Shakespearean actor, but
yeah.
I feel like this has got one of the best casts with the bigger name.
He's on Life Force at that time. I think it's Life Force.
I have no idea
what
that
Seed.
Is.
It's a really bad sci-fi movie.
Yeah. Deanna Troi had done porn.
Right.
All right. That's Star Trek Discovery.
Cool.
I will know whether if I truly love it when I buy the technical manual. I want to see the Star Trek Discovery technical manual.
You've seen it. It's called the intro.
No shit, right?
That's it. It's 2 pages long. It's a couple of gloves and a warp nacelle.
Yeah, you got me there, man. All right. I think that's it. I don't know when we're coming back. I think we need to come back for, are you interested in doing a Deuce roundup?
Oh yeah. I haven't caught up on that. I watched the third or second episode, but
yeah, I'd like to catch up and maybe do a roundup on that. Because I really like that show. So that'll probably be the next one. We'll probably keep touching base on Star Trek too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Bald Move TV will come back when it comes back. Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya.